Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Dynasty Gambit. Here to talk about rankings is Matthew Russell, or Chu, as Matthew Russell, I suppose, is the joke there. But welcome, Matthew, to this episode of on this show on the Going for Two Live Network. I know you were on the network yesterday, so going for 2 days in a row.
That's right. Yeah, so I guess it. I'm making my rounds, so you know, after today, I'll have to set up another back to back and see how it goes. But thank you for having me, Kyle. Appreciate it.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, loved having you on during the draft special, round three extravaganza. So yeah, you joined for a portion of that, so really appreciated that. But felt like I know I certainly wanted to get you on, and I think my co-host agreed to really get you on to the regular show. So glad we could make that happen this week.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's funny because just a bit of background here. I have I don't know if it's a bad tendency or if it's just kind of the luck of when things get scheduled, but I have a tendency to, whoever's on the Gambit is usually on another Going for Two Live show that week. A couple of weeks ago, we had Rahul on and he did Dynasty Saturday Night 5 2 days later. So it's going for two for one, I suppose.
That's right. I think... Yeah, in like the entertainment world, it's good doing the press junket. So, you know, we're just, yeah, we gotta hit the spots.
Yeah, for sure. So, like we said, we're going to talk about some dynasty rankings. We have a couple of quick hitter subjects. I suppose before we really start to get into it, well, let's actually check in with to see who's joined us. So Toronto Dave here, football, love, and party. Yeah, I love to have football parties. but yeah, appreciate Dave for joining as always. And our Going for Two family member, Jamie Perogue. I think I'm saying your name right, Jamie. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong there. Perogue, I'm pretty sure it is. I've listened to enough episodes of the Cheat Sheet, I should know. So if you want to find out how it's pronounced, go watch the Fantasy Cheat Sheet. There you go. Mike Hicks has it down. But yeah, appreciate Jamie and Dave. It seems like they're always in the live chat. So appreciate both of them for sure. And if you would like to be up on the screen, if you'd like to interact with us, we encourage you to head over to the Going for Two Live YouTube channel. And subscribe, of course, and like the video. Get that live notification bell because we've got live shows on the network almost every day of the week. I think we're going to basically have like a full like 6 day stretch in a row this week with like seven shows in that 6 day stretch. So. Tomorrow night we're doing a live personal league podcast. Okay, it is like pierogies. I feel like that's how I always remember Jamie's name is Perogue. You're gonna say pierogies, but just don't finish it, which is wrong because you should always finish the pierogies. They're so delicious, at least if they're done properly.
That's good to have that reminder as a word. That's a very good cue for that.
Yeah, I guess if his name was Perogue, it would be like how do you explain that to someone? But it's definitely
it's like pierogi, but not pierogi.
Yeah. Say the exact opposite. But yeah, so actually something tomorrow night that I do want to plug. So if you head over to goingfortwolive.com, that Going for Two Live website is coming, by the way, but goingfortwo.com, there's a section there called PLP, Personal League Podcast. And what we do is you're going to find out tomorrow night if you don't know what it is, but a few of us Going for Two rankers and dynasty managers, we come together and we'll review an entire league. So like tomorrow we're doing, I think it's a 10 team league. So I think between the three of us, we're splitting either three or four teams each. And we're going to just detailed go through the team. And a lot of times I like to approach it as actionable advice. What if I was this manager, what would I do? And that could be big moves. Like how do you address, you know, your quarterback is doing super flex. How do you make, what are some big trade ideas? But I also like the details of, okay, back end of the roster cleanups, the small things like, okay, a lot of times it's cut these four players and go pick up X, you know, run a free agent at this position. So just some things like that. And I know like we've had, we used to not do it live, but now we are doing it live. And we've had, you know, so far a couple live episodes of the PLP. And it seems like those, league members really enjoy the fact that they get to chat with us live too, kind of like Jamie and Dave are doing it here. But yes, it's definitely not pierogi like a frog. But I suppose that would be the way, though, if it was that would be the word to use. So yep, I guess that's Dave's idea. Ingenious, Dave. So again, lots of shows on the Going for Two Live Network. And if you would like your own league for a PLP, definitely head over to goingfortwo.com/PLP, and there's a form there to fill out. I think it's right around $100 per podcast, and we'll go through your entire league, all the teams, we'll rank them, and like I said, give a ton of good advice. And I think, like, between us, whoever's the so-called experts, I don't want to be too cocky and call myself an expert, but when we're discussing it, I find we do have some really good conversations. So each of us are prepared with the teams we have, but we also do have some great conversations. And I know we've had some league, like one league has done this all 3 years. And so they've kind of experienced the old school, just audio pre-recorded that we'd send. And now they got to enjoy the live experience. It seems like they've enjoyed that even more. So sincerely, I don't think we've ever had a bad review. Every league we've done has just positive feedback. A lot of returning leagues come back for a second try and things like that. I know there's a lot of dynasty. We will do some redraft PLP stuff too later on. Definitely some opportunities there. Matthew, not to take up all your time, one more plug though. Our sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. And you can use the promo code GF2 or scan the QR code on screen. If you are not yet part of Underdog, and if you do that when signing up, either through the promo code or the QR code, they will give you a deposit match up to $100. So if you put in the max $100, they'll double that, and you'll have $200 in your account, which you can use on best ball drafts, which seems like that's the big fad with Underdog, of course. I guess there's no more NBA or NHL. That's all over. But I'm sure they have golf pick'ems, and I hope they have CFL in there. There's a CFL game on right now, in fact. But there's going to be, I suppose, baseball's probably on there too. WNBA, sports like that. Player props. You could do higher, lower on points scored in games and some things like that. So, again, use the promo code GF2 or the QR code, scan that, and get a double deposit match. So, Matthew, I guess anything you want to say to the listeners before we get started?
I guess I want to say just, very excited to be on, very specifically talking dynasty rankings. This, of course, is the first time I'm getting to do that. So excited to, talk with you, Kyle, and kind of, share processes back and forth and just have that conversation of, how do we arrive at these things? Plenty of these are tough decisions. And like we talked about a little bit before we got on here, it's really an ever-changing thing. If we sincerely had the time to just tinker and update it every single day, I'm honestly sure we would. And I'm sure we kind of do mentally. We just don't log on and do it. So.
Yeah, constantly thinking about dynasty. The dynasty brain never shuts off. That's for sure. So I guess before we get to that, I believe a couple weeks ago we did kind of touch on the DeAndre Hopkins release. However, I think since our last episode, Dalvin Cook has now been released by the Minnesota Vikings. So out of some quick topics, just like I think the Vikings running back room in general is an interesting conversation. And I think we may get to talk a bit Dalvin Cook later on. So we'll stick with like what the Vikings have now. Right now it's Alexander Mattison, Ty Chandler, and Dwayne McBride. So I guess we could start kind of discussing what is the value of Alexander Mattison right now?
So this one's kind of tricky. I feel like in the last couple of years, since Mattison has come into the league, he was, immediately behind Dalvin Cook. And there's other players around the league, if you think about maybe like a Tony Pollard coming in behind Ezekiel Elliott, there's plenty of those types of things where that example specifically, Pollard had already carved out and was growing a role, even with Zeke maintaining a reasonable amount of touches. With Alexander Mattison, I felt like while Dalvin Cook was there, really his only opportunities to kind of step up just in a volume sense was more so with Dalvin Cook having a tremendous number of shoulder injuries specifically. I feel like every season, the last couple of seasons, he's been out at least a game or two fully. So Mattison was going into the game knowing he was going to be, the lead back. And really looking at those games, he had done okay. I know not 2022, but 2021, he had a couple of top 10 finishes there. But I really think that if you look at those two just in that vacuum there, Pollard showed he's worth, his talent is worth it in playing time, even with Zeke there. Mattison didn't really prove that with Cook there. So simply just because, Cook is no longer there, Madison's volume will increase because it kind of has to. But between McBride, Chandler, the special teamer, the guy that I'm still banging the drum for, and Kenny Nwangu, there's guys there that I think they'll just kind of fill that space in the backfield. And this is a pass-heavy team. And I really don't think that it's going to be, Mattison is going to be, a top 10, top 12, even top 15 guy this season. He's someone who, if you can sell him, in my opinion, a dynasty to someone who really believes he can replicate even 80% of what Dalvin Cook did, sell him right now.
I have one share of Alexander Mattison. I don't know if you have any in any of your leagues.
Not currently, no.
So the one share I had, I acquired it actually pretty cheap last year, kind of right at the deadline, sold some aging receivers. Someone was going for the win now. I just missed the playoffs. And, well, you know, it's funny, selling aging receivers to get a running back in a rebuild, but I also felt like Mattison had a chance if Cook got cut or was traded, there might be a spike in value. So I tried to capitalize on that and spam the whole league for a first. Any manager that had a 24 first, I usually add like a fourth or a third to Mattison to try and get the first, and no one would take it. So value not quite at a first right now, at least in that league. So maybe different league markets are there. I wanted to see, like, okay, is someone willing to like overpay right now? Is someone really a true believer, like you were saying? And it doesn't seem like in that league that's the case. So I've got to kind of reevaluate. Do I want to sell him? Do I want to hang on to my only share? So that's kind of if I could get a first, I felt it was an easy decision to trade away. Now that I can't get the first, might be an easy decision to keep. So maybe I'll keep updating on the Alexander Mattison report throughout this offseason. We'll see how it goes from there.
And, you know, it really only takes, you know, again, like I was saying, like, back in 2021 specifically, he did have a couple of those big boom games, which, you know, it took, I want to say, probably 25 plus touches each game to do so. But, you know, if he starts the season in that first game and actually gets that volume in that game just simply because of how the script is going, hope maybe that's your chance to sell. I don't know. It's tricky with that because I feel like it's set up to where you have, like, the consensus seems to be, oh, his value increased. Everybody wants him. And like you're saying, you know, you're trying to, you know, trade, and I understand it's for first, but still, if someone believes in him, believes that he can take a big step forward, and just no one grabs onto it. It's kind of the weird back and forth of, like, there's two narratives happening, but which one's true? Are either one true, really? I don't know. It's very bizarre.
I guess both can be true in different contexts. And really all that matters is, in your own league, is someone willing to pay that price? And yep. It was a 14 team league in my case, but there are already like two or three teams with multiple firsts. So I didn't necessarily have access to all 13 other managers to make that offer to. In fact, it might've only been like eight, like some people have already kind of sold off maybe the 25 firsts even. So, in those teams that are hoarding the first, they're hoarding them for a reason. I think they don't want to, like, to their credit, they don't want to sell those firsts now. This is not the optimal time to be selling future firsts. I'd rather do it in season if I had a future pick. Like a future first, even like, you know, I'd ideally like to almost hold those to almost the rookie draft and try and sell them kind of around the rookie draft or during, and you know, forced to pick. In terms of trades, it looks like Jamie managed to pierogi on up to someone and get a first for Mattison. Took Kincaid at 109, kind of just a straight up one for one. And I guess, you know, in your case, Jamie, like, you know, the rookie draft's still coming. I think in a lot of, like, the case I had with Alexander Mattison, that's a rookie draft that actually happens before the NFL draft. So wouldn't have had chance to do it for this year's picks. But, you know, I'd almost prefer a future first to Kincaid because it gives me the flexibility to, I can trade that for a different player if I want to in season. But I, you know, I think capitalizing on Madison's value to get a potential difference maker at tight end. We'll see if he is or not, but, you know, the immediate returns on this might not be great, but the long-term value might certainly be on the Kincaid side.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a pretty good get there. But, like, yeah, like you're saying with the, you know, the draft pick is the one that maintains the value once it's made. It's, of course, a bit variable, even if it's not you know, Kincaid, it's tight end. You know, if the assumption is it's going to take a little bit of time for him to really acclimate to the NFL, but then again, you know, is he basically going to be a big slot guy? Probably.
Well, Jamie brought us a nice stat here. 69% of his big games were against Seattle and Detroit and their horrible run defenses.
There you go.
Yeah, the small sample size fallacy, unfortunately. I missed this one. This is an awesome comment, and it's so Jamie. But we're going to talk rankings later, but you must have Roshan at 101, right? Right, Chu?
I'm hearing there's a lot of Roshan love, of course. You know, I mentioned it last night. You know, I got to show my love for my boy Khalil Herbert, a fellow Virginia Tech alumni, so... It's blind obedience to him.
Gonna plug our Going for Two Live Network. Los D Mix. I think he went to Virginia Tech as well. a Virginia school of some sort. I'm bad with the college name.
Who is that?
Los D Mix. That's his Twitter handle at Los D Mix. Part of the Speak On It podcast. They go for all the people watching. They're live basically every Tuesday night, usually around 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Do a great just sports talk show. There'll be some fantasy talk. They actually, the two of them start up a dynasty league with a few of us from the Going for Two Live Network last year. So since last August-ish, they've been kind of incorporating the dynasty talk as well. Slowly but surely. So it's a great show. They're so much fun. They're so awesome. But was it Virginia Tech? That's my instinct, is that he went to Virginia Tech. I know he was running track at one of those Virginia schools. So
gotcha. See, I'm so stuck in dynasty. I thought you said Dontayvion Wicks, and I was like, well, he did go to UVA, but that's not what you said. So I'm stuck thinking players.
D is a Packers fan. So who knows?
Yeah. Nice. There you go. Full circle.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, just full circle it back to the Vikings running backs. Ty Chandler and Dwayne McBride, and I guess I didn't mention Kenny Nwangwu, so that's on me. do you have any shares of any of those three Vikings guys?
The only one currently is Kenny Nwangwu, which of course is probably the reason I'm championing him, but not necessarily when I had him over the offseason. Not really sure what was going to happen with Dalvin Cook. I think at the time, I ended up not being able to draft McBride. Somebody else who was in the league, who actually already had Madison, I believe, snagged Chandler in a couple of the leagues. So, I think a lot the writing on the wall for a couple of my dynasty leagues was people thought maybe something was going to happen in that backfield with Cook maybe leaving if he wasn't going to take a pay cut. So everybody kind of, grabbed whatever share of whatever bit of that backfield they could. So.
Yeah, for sure. They all kind of upped in value, and I don't have any McBride, I don't have any Nwangwu, but I do have three Ty Chandler shares. And so I was also trying to capitalize, not that I felt his value was going to increase, but just that someone was willing to take him. I think that's what those guys are. Maybe McBride, he's the shiny new toy as a rookie, more people are kind of willing to take him, but Chandler didn't really do much last year, so people ready to discard him and throw him away. So the fact that someone's willing to just pay anything for him, I felt was good enough value. So I have had three shares, I should say. One is a salary cap contract league, and he's still on a pretty cheap contract for a couple of years. So it's you got to start three running backs. It's a half PPR league. It's tough to get running backs in that league. So that's not the league I wanted to trade him in. But the other two more conventional dynasty leagues, I thought, okay, let's see which of these two I can sell him in. I was trying for seconds. Didn't happen. Did manage to sell him for Boston Scott and a third. It is a 12-team super flex, start 10, PPR, pretty conventional.
That works. I mean, honestly, even if it was just the third, I mean, getting another back to come back, again, I understand that in that Eagles backfield, Boston Scott's really only going to be good for Giants games.
but, I made that joke on the podcast last night talking about trades.
The Giant killer. But I mean,
I think they unfortunately play the Giants in like week 18, one of the games. Oh. So you like fantasy-wise, you only have the 1 week to take advantage of it.
Man, they set that
week 18 up. DFS though. That'll be the play for sure.
Does the NFL scheduling group not even care about fantasy football and Boston Scott?
Have you seen how many week 14 buys they put every year? Of course they don't.
Very true.
We've known this.
That's right.
I agree. And honestly, the idea of the Boston Scott trade, it's my buddy Achilles. So we actually talked this trade on the phone. We were just talking about fantasy and stuff, and I'd mentioned I want to sell one of these Ty Chandler shares, and he's like, oh yeah, I'm in, I guess, in both the leagues, so let's see which one makes it work. And he was like, well, I'm just cutting Boston Scott, do you want him in the trade? And I was like, if I'm gonna get the third, might as well running back depth, might as well. If I need to cut him later, I'll cut him later.
Yeah, those are nice when it's like, well, I'm all whenever it's making a trade and you see it's kind of like lopsided of like, there's gonna be like one less player on one side, it's like, do you want to just send me that player? It's like, I may cut them a minute after you send them to me, but it's like, I like the balance. So,
yeah, for sure. I still have Boston Scott. It's funny because I know Yeti, I guess Yeti's usually busy on Thursdays, so he doesn't usually make the Dynasty Gambit live, but he's in that league and he gave the poop emoji to the trade. So he clearly, and he's a Vikings fan, so he must clearly not like Ty Chandler at all. Like, you're giving anything for him? That's awful. Maybe Yeti thinks opposite, but I do agree with Jamie. I like Chandler more than McBride. I don't know how you stand on the two of them. Or is just Nwangwu so much better than both that it doesn't matter?
Oh, Nwangwu's, I don't think, better than the both of them. Well, honestly, I mean, I think they're polar opposites, not Chandler and McBride. Like, Nwangwu's polar opposite of those two in terms of kind of what he provides. I think the fact that, his roster spot is safe being a special teamer and, you know, with what he brings. But I think between Chandler and McBride, I think Chandler's maybe the more balanced, at least, you know, McBride getting little to no target share in college. Yeah, that's,
he only has five more career college catches than me. So I'm close.
Oh, man. But I mean, you know, McBride is a heck of a runner between the tackles. And I do think he can very easily handle the early down work. And I don't really know that his skill set, if they're even going to attempt to have him grow into something that would be any of that third down role. But again, you know, if it's going to be such a pass heavy group, maybe it's McBride that's sincerely just tiring down that defensive line with his bruising style. But, you know, Chandler does feel like the more complete back between he and McBride and Nwangu. So it'll probably be Chandler behind Madison, honestly.
I will say I am not a big McBride fan. I think his contact balance is fine, but I think he's not really great at anything. Like, I don't love the footwork. I'm looking back at my rookie ranks and like my initial film grades. I had him at RB21. He was behind undrafted free agent legends Kalen LeBourne, Xavien Valade, a fullback Hunter Luepke. That was kind of my bad for putting a fullback in this. Keaton Mitchell, who I still love. I did not like McBride. So, from a pure talent standpoint, I think Chandler's actually the better runner, personally. But so that's why I'm kind of all in on Chandler as the main backup. But also, it doesn't matter what I think. What matters is what the Vikings think. So that's why I'm also willing to sell shares of Chandler.
Well, I mean, McBride lasted to what, the sixth round or seventh round?
I think seventh.
Yeah. So, I mean, they did draft him. I guess they have enough value in drafting him, but if he waited till the seventh round, the Vikings had plenty of other opportunities to pick him and they decided not to. So,
I mean, Chandler, I think, was a fifth round pick. So it's not like he gets, or like, he's still a day three guy. Yeah. So the Vikings may view both investments as pretty similar.
Mm-hmm.
So it really just comes down to who do they think is better on the field when it gets down to it. So they may not even have an answer for us right now. And I think I do wonder with like people hesitant to buy Madison or give up a second for Chandler, is there a fear that the Vikings bring in someone else? Do they bring in a Leonard Fournette? Do they bring in Kareem Hunt? Do they bring in Zeke? Do they re-sign Dalvin Cook super cheap?
He's a free agent. Yeah, right. I mean, they definitely could. I think that's kind of, you know, the belief in being nervous about Madison not seemingly being a tremendous talent in terms of taking more of a target share when Dalvin Cook was there and healthy. Dalvin Cook is an incredible running back, so I understand why that didn't happen. But, you know, if Alexander Madison is one cheap veteran signing away from, you know, losing a third more of his touches, that's pretty scary. So you're basically just hoping that the team doesn't, you know, get a security blanket in just a cheap running back. And if anything, the NFL has proven that that's what a team's going to do. They're going to have, you know, they're not going to have the Ravens problem of eventually having to, you know, depend on Kenyon Drake and was it Tyson Williams or whatever his name is. So you never know what's going to happen. So it's better just to have a couple of guys there and see what happens.
Yeah, that Kenyon Drake, Latavius Murray, have last year? That running back room was a trip. I think Mark Ingram is there for part of it. I can't remember. Probably not. But yes, that was one of the worst offenses, we'll say, at one point when they had suffered so many injuries. But I think we'd say the Ravens are probably a pretty good offense normally. So that leads into to our next question. Who are the best and worst offenses for fantasy football?
So in terms of best offenses, and I know it's kind of considering, you know, if you just simply think best offense, you know, if you look at the Chiefs and then you're like, well, yeah, it's good if you have Mahomes or Kelsey. Otherwise, you know, are you confident that MBS is going to catch enough deep balls? Do you think Sky Moore and, you know, Kadarius Toney are going to get enough gadget touches for it to be valuable? But in terms of if you look at just the team as a whole, in my opinion, I think one of the most beneficial ones is the Chargers. Second in pass attempts last year, a fairly efficient team. And I'm honestly incredibly excited to see Kellen Moore go over there as the OC. If he's going to amp up that passing volume and, you know, get a little more creativity for those guys, you know, I think Keenan Allen, he's a bit older now. I understand that, but I think he's going to be the one that holds up much better than Mike Williams because Mike Williams is made of glass at this point. And adding Quentin Johnston, not a rookie I was incredibly high on, but again, it's another strong receiver to add to that group. You know, Palmer stepped in well admirably with Keenan Allen injured. You still have Gerald Everett, who I think is as much as I think someone like Tyler Higbee is long forgotten, I think people really just continue to forget about how good Gerald Everett has been and is still not too terribly old. So not to discount Eckler and the lack of a backup running back there, but just in sheer passing volume, I think it's going to be a tremendous team.
Actually, hint out the rankings. I've got both Everett and Higbee in the top 20 at Dynasty tight ends. So I feel, nice. And I feel like that might not be, not everyone will have them that high. They might be outside the tight end two range. So
yeah,
no, for sure. I think I had Everett as the top 12 guy coming into last year. So didn't quite live up to that, but I think he's still pretty good. And like you said, it's a great offense to be part of.
Mm. What about you? What's your, I think when you think of a great fantasy offense, what's one you think of?
I always go to the numbers, and I have completed like the first draft through of my touchdown projections. I think we're going to maybe do a projections project at Going for Two with full projections. But right now, looking at my touchdown projections, I'm just, well, who are the teams I think will score the most touchdowns overall on offense? And I've got five teams with 50 or more touchdowns and nine teams with 48 or more. So that, and I think that 10th team is the Chargers. I'm at 44 touchdowns. Okay. I'm looking back at what I did for the Chargers, 4.8% touchdown rate for Herbert, which is his career average currently, because last year was so low. Like his first 2 years career average, I think, is above, you know, 5, almost 6%. So am I punishing him too much for the down year? Maybe with only 33 passing touchdowns, that could afford to be higher. So I might view the Chargers as that next threshold. But right now, to me, in order, I've got the Chiefs with the most at 56 touchdowns, Eagles 54, the 49ers actually have third at 52, Bengals 51, Bills 50. So those are the five I would kind of view as elite offenses. And guess what? Four of those teams went to the NFC or their respective championship games last year. Ravens at 49, the Browns at 48, the Cowboys at 48, and the Jets at 48. So I think the one theme to me is the elite quarterbacks. Because those are the guys going to be throwing a lot of touchdowns. So those are the offenses I think will just have the best opportunity. And yeah, they may not be great. Some of those offenses, it's one or two pieces you want, but there's some of them where it is multiple. So look at projections and look at, like, frankly, that's kind of, I'm just maybe oversimplifying it. But to me, it's the opportunity for the touchdowns that make the big ceiling games. And those are the offenses I would view as the elite offenses.
No, I think that makes perfect sense. I mean, you want your guys in a position, you know, if you want to figure out a process for it, it's tying it to at least, you know, one or a handful of metrics without complicating it too much further. And I mean, I think certainly with touchdowns, that lends itself to them putting themselves in position to score, whether it's getting into the red zone, whether it's big plays, you know, by any means necessary. So makes sense.
Yeah, and let's actually talk about the worst offenses, because to me, it'll be the opposite. Who are the teams I think will score the least amount of touchdowns? So it's pretty simple for me.
Yeah, I'm going to have a hunch as to maybe what some of these are. I'm going to guess we've got, maybe not in this order, the Bucks.
Yeah, they're tied for last. Nice. 32 touchdowns is what I project for the Bucks. Yeah.
Are they tied with the Texans?
Nope. Texans at 37, and I think that will actually lead into the next point we're going to talk about afterwards. But
okay. Yeah.
I think to me, like, the big boost is I got a few things right last year, and I had the Texans at 7 rushing touchdowns, and that's what they scored. So I definitely got the victory there. I think bringing in Singletary is significant in that they might almost double. I think I've got them doubling their touchdown total, actually.
Okay.
AFC South. Yeah. Texans with 14 rushing touchdowns. So I think that's where I think they'll get a big boost is, you know, again, I'm doubling their rushing touchdown total from last year. And I think Singletary is a big factor for that, in that because all they had was Pierce and every other running back they had was awful and mostly pass catchers, whereas we've seen Singletary have touchdown upside before. So I think he's a much significant upgrade on anyone else they had on that team, and because of that, if Pierce ever goes out, they still have a goal line back who's viable. So I think that was a big problem when they didn't have Pierce. They just couldn't score on the ground, and I mean they really just struggled to score in general.
Yeah. And Rams down there?
No, I actually have the Rams kind of more middle of the pack. So I have the Commanders tied with the Bucks for the fewest at 32.
Whoa, that's some Sam Howell slander right there.
And that's exactly what it is. It's and that was a tricky one because there's a couple teams, I did this with the Falcons as well, where I kind of combined Howell and like for the Washington case, combined Howell and Brissett. So Sam Howell in one career game had a 5.3% career touchdown rate. Do I think he's going to replicate that over a course of a whole season? I'm skeptical. So I kind of evened it out with Brissett's 3% touchdown rate to kind of go in the middle, which actually only has them at 18 passing touchdowns. So that's a big factor why.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, that is tough. Yeah, again, like you're saying, like it's leaning on, you know, those numbers and those factors of figuring out where you think they're going to end up at the end of the season. And I can't say too much more because I know that it's weird. I'm not like big on the Commanders per se, but in terms of, you know, what I think of Sam Howell, again, still bitter. The Panthers did not draft him. They got Bryce Young now. It'll be fine. But, you know, having a sneaky good trio of receivers there, you know, another Virginia Tech alumni and Logan Thomas, who, again, I think he's probably about done at this point, but I hope he's got a little bit left in the tank. And Antonio Gibson, another guy who I think is going to finally take that step forward as being the more complete back in that backfield, which I think he's always been. They just never really let him do it to the capacity he really can. But yeah, I definitely understand that that projection, that thought process.
And now what I just calculated quickly is, what if I just went with Howell? And again, career average for one start is kind of tough to just say that, like, that's probably who he is. But like, let's just take that for example. So at 5.3% touchdown rate, I had them at 441 pass attempts. That would give 23 passing touchdowns. So suddenly we're increasing by five, and they're right with the Texans, the Colts at 37, and the Panthers at 36. So like right in line with those other rookie quarterbacks. I think a lot of the teams I have below 40 touchdowns are those young quarterbacks. The three rookies from this year, Steelers are down there. The Packers are down there just because, I mean, Love and Sam Howell have the same number of career starts in the NFL. So like, it's really tough to know like who these guys are for real as passers. So because of those questions, I think those are the offenses I kind of want to avoid, is the teams with uncertain quarterbacks. I want to chase the good quarterbacks. And I think, again, a lot of it comes like does impact these projections so much because the passing touchdowns do fluctuate. Like I've got, you know, Washington at 18. I've got Patrick Mahomes with 41 touchdowns, which I projected last year, and that's exactly what he got. So I'm doing it the same thing again. 40, right back with 41. That'll happen. That's totally how the stats will work. But just like rerunning the projections this year, like it seemed like 41 was almost a good average on what he's done over his career. So maybe he can better it. Maybe it'll be worse. But that's kind of right in line with the averages. So
yeah, at a certain point, I mean, certainly with someone like Patrick Mahomes, like they're always learning and always getting better, but at a certain point, it's like maybe they just start, it's, you know, maybe being done in a different and more efficient way, but it also, it's at some point he can't throw any more touchdowns than he's already throwing. So,
yeah, for sure. I mean, we've seen him get to 57, but he's done that once so far. Yeah. So, like, is that even ever going to happen again, let alone every year? Well, since you like Sam Howell so much, let's see Jamie's question here. He just traded Sam Howell and a 24 second for Kirk Cousins. So his question is, did I rob the dude?
I'm uncertain on what's going to happen to Kirk after this season. But again, like we were talking about, the assumption in the Vikings pass volume going to be through the roof. You know, I would more so lean towards Cousins, and you know what you have right there, even if it's just for this year and next year. I think he's what, 35 now. So in that offense, I'm perfectly fine with taking Cousins, and you know, especially if it's in super flex, if that gets to be your second quarterback that you're starting behind a more top tier guy, that's the stability you need as the second quarterback, hopefully. And then that'd be fantastic. Again, I try to balance it with, you know, my affinity for certain players. I then go to rank them, and that's kind of when I realize, like, all right, I like the guy, but when you actually put it next to other players, I'm not going to put him, you know, top 10 or some nonsense like that. So I'm a fan of some players, but I'm realistic, I promise.
I will say, like the thing with Cousins, and I think you touched on it well, it's more about the age and like, when will he retire? How many years does he have left? Because frankly, I think he's played well enough that if the Vikings move on, I expect he's going to start somewhere else and like be like a fully trenched in, like, we're not questioning it. Like this team is investing him to start week one. I think he's done well enough over his career that he's basically starting till he retires. Like, I think he's in up, like his efficiency, you know, from a touchdown throwing perspective, touchdown rates and a lot of the yards per attempt. Like, I mean, his numbers are better than Matt Stafford's. There's no reason where if Stafford's basically his body's falling off and he's still starting, there's no reason Cousins shouldn't, frankly. So
heck, let's see him in Tampa Bay next year.
I mean, well, yeah, and I think that's it. There's like, if like the teams that don't get Caleb Williams, the teams that can't, I guess that'll be the next question is, what's your favorite of the expressions regarding Caleb Williams? But like, whatever teams don't have an answer at quarterback and Kirk Cousins is available, I think they jump at a heartbeat. Like how the Vikings, like, and there were a few teams that were in on Cousins bidding wise, and the Vikings paid good to get him. I could see something else, like another big contract coming up if he becomes a free agent, or, you know, a big payday in store for the Vikings if they actually trade him to a team that really needs the quarterback.
Yep, definitely.
So it's a super flex with Dak plus Mac Jones and Lance on the bench. It's funny, I've got a super flex room of like Dak and Cousins, and it's like, okay, they're almost essentially the same player. Super efficient. You might not, especially with Dak, the rushing floor is starting to disappear. And mm-hmm. I think with Dak, actually the rushing ceiling is what's been zapped because he's not scoring rushing touchdowns. He'll still run for yards, but like he's not getting six rushing touchdowns a year. Like that's the major problem with Dak. He's just, that top five ceiling might not be there anymore, but he and Cousins should hover around QB 10 to 12 for as long as they're playing, I believe. And it's funny because Jamie showed me another one of his teams today, and it's Justin Herbert and Mac Jones. So he's Jamie's showing his affinity for the Jones.
Not many people have that, right?
I mean, you know, where then those young quarterbacks in the rankings is kind of tricky. Mac Jones, Kenny Pickett, Jordan Love, Brock Purdy, Trey Lance. I mean, Fields is easy.
Right.
Fields, Lawrence, the who's that next big quarterback? It looks like it's going to be Caleb Williams. And, you know, we've run through the expressions. We had suck for luck, tank for Tua. I'm surprised I never heard this, but I thought of it. Lose for Lawrence. Was that ever uttered? Because that one just seems pretty perfect, too.
I don't remember. When it was mentioned, I don't remember hearing that one, but that makes sense.
Yeah, I felt it's like fluid, that was a wasted opportunity because I didn't really remember tank for Trevor, I think, is what more people were saying.
Yeah.
But they had already done the tank for Tua, so it's like, let's keep it original. So
yep.
Have you heard any of your favorite similar expressions regarding Caleb Williams?
I haven't heard anybody say any to me. The only one that I've come up with, which it's not greater, but I guess it's not tank for Caleb, is can't for Caleb. So I guess it's just can't Ooh. Win kind of thing. But I've yet to hear anything else. There's, you know, once we get closer to the season, there's going to be one that just pops out. That's just,
oh,
incredible.
I've already heard teams talking since the NFL draft. And since the Cardinals end up with the Texans extra first, it's like, okay, they've got two shots at this. I heard a lot of collapse for Caleb.
Ooh, I like that. Okay. That works.
It does have a nice ring. I've come up with a few for Williams, actually. Mm-hmm. So the first one is whiff for Williams. And the other one is, and I know I've listened to a lot of podcasts that kind of start using this, woof for Williams.
I like that because you can kind of add that little dramatization to the woof. I like that.
Yeah. Well, that's the only way you can really say it is like, because that to me, that's what that expression means is you like, so you're woof. So disgusted by something or something is so awful. It's like, ugh, woof. That's a miss. That might be the Cardinal season this year. Yeah, crumble for Caleb. Ooh, that's a nice one, Jamie. Just
I like
made that up.
Yep.
Genius Jamie.
Magic is happening right now.
Oh, and I missed this comment, but he's saying that Mac is just cheap right now, and that's how the cookie crumbles. Off a down season, everyone's like, oh, is Bailey Zappi going to replace him?
I will say, yeah, that really picked up some steam going into the offseason. But, I mean, when you have Matt Patricia running your offense, I really don't know how good it can go. And bringing in Bill O'Brien, I do think Mac Jones is primed for a bounce back, certainly compared to what last season was. But I think it was his rookie season. He was like QB12, QB13, something like that.
I don't think he was that high, but I believe he was right around
top 15.
Like it seemed like the higher end of the QB2s, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of a sneaky, like it was at the end of the season, you look back, you're like, was he really that high? Like it's
22
almost
touchdowns, I believe. I remember looking that up the other day.
Yeah. So, I think he... this season can come closer to that than he did his finish this past season. I think QB22, I want to say.
For sure. I think his touchdown rate went down by over like a full percent. And like, it, you know, should rebound to around four. What did I have him at? I have the Patriots down there. Like they're tied with the Cardinals for offensive touchdowns at 35. So I don't necessarily have the full confidence. Yeah. I've got him at 20 touchdowns, which it's only two off his career high. So, sorry. I was going to say something. Now I forget. That's okay. So I guess moving on to the, like, just talking about these young quarterbacks, when I'm, you know, talking about my touchdown projections, one of the things I really struggled with at first was, what am I doing with the rookie quarterbacks? I know I struggled with that last year. Or the, like, Jordan Love and Kenny Pickett with such small sample sizes. And I mean, like, Ridder and Howell, I kind of combined them with their other quarterbacks. So that kind of made it easier just to give me more information as opposed to, like, the... especially for Howell, the really small sample size. So I decided to do is I went back, like this is specifically for how do I project Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, and Anthony Richardson for touchdowns. And I went back and looked at since 2011. And I know JJ Zacharyson talked about doing a study. And like, if you look at 2010 to 2011, like the numbers really start to drastically change. Like this new pass happy offense era really does kind of, and it's, I think coming out of the lockout, there was a bunch of rules made. So 2011 really does kick off the era that we are in now for football. So I went back to 2011, looked at every first round quarterback who started at least 9 games, so at least half a season in their rookie, like as rookies. And I want to know what all their touchdown percentages were. And the gamut was so wide. Kenny Pickett, woof, 1.8%, the worst of any quarterback since 2011 that started, again, at least 9 games as a rookie.
Man.
So that was another interesting thing of, okay, I assume he's not going to stay at 1.8% this year, touchdown percent, but how much do I bump him by? Anyway, so I think the some of the higher ones were Baker Mayfield actually was the highest as a rookie. It's like 5.8%. Marcus Mariota, I think, was above 5%, like 5.1 is one of the two or three highest. So what I did was I looked at the average and I looked at the median. The average was 4% exactly, and the median was 3.6%. So I essentially projected all five of those guys, the three rookies from this year, Jordan Love and Kenny Pickett, in that range between 4% and 3.6%. I went 3.6 for Pickett because it doubles last year. And I look at the jump Lawrence made. He went from 2% to 4.3% touchdown rate. So he more than doubled. And I think he's better than Pickett. So I won't say Pickett will more than double, but a double seems fair. And it kind of, it puts him in line with the other first round rookie quarterbacks. So, because he hasn't started a full rookie season either. So he's almost effectively still a rookie. I think he's got 12 starts under his belt. So he hasn't hit that full season of worth of starts yet. Jordan Love's career average is actually 3.6%, which I found hilarious. So I just stuck with it. Like, okay, well, that's easy enough for me. It's right with that median. I think I went 4% for the rookies. Like, Pickett really hasn't shown enough to, for me to say he's better than Bryce Young and Stroud. I would imagine those guys are better than Pickett, to be honest. So I put them at 4%. I felt that was fair.
Yeah, I like that. I found, you know, looking at the show notes, I found that incredibly interesting. And, you know, hearing you expand on that, talking about, you know, the change since 2011 and being able to kind of see that, and that is pretty wild thinking of how historically bad Kenny Pickett was last season. I think we saw it and we didn't think it was great, but to put it in that kind of perspective, I think sheds a different light on it. Definitely is a woof, as you said.
Trevor Lawrence had such an awful rookie season, and this was even worse.
Yeah, that was, and I think with Trevor Lawrence, you know, people, I was shocked at, you know, after that first season, how many people had kind of flipped and maybe not were fully out on him. But it's like, well, I guess he's not generational. It's like, look what he had to deal with. It's like, if anything, it's just like, can he keep his composure and not lose his mind? Because, but just watching a lot of the, anytime he was talking with the reporters, that's the most level-headed guy dealing with absolute nonsense that I've ever seen in, you know, in his rookie year going through all that. So the fact that he got a very quarterback-friendly coach and, you know, again, already had solid weapons, but got a couple better ones. I hate that I'm saying that with Evan Engram and Zay Jones, but it turned around 180 degrees. And I mean, who knows, maybe we might even see another little jump with Calvin Ridley in tow.
Yeah, that's potential for sure. Is Urban Meyer the worst coach in NFL history?
I'm actively going and look back right now. It, when you add the negative press of it all, I'm just going to say yes, because it's just hilarious how all that shook out and it ended so quickly.
Yeah, for sure. I think the off the field stuff is even like, he just seems like he's an awful person. But I went back and looked back at the numbers because I was very anti-Urban Meyer when they hired him. I remember being on record on the Full Press Packers pod. We do coaching changes episode every year. And I went on record saying, this is the worst coaching hire this year, this cycle, whatever, you know, 2 years ago, whatever that cycle was. Felt like my comment on that next year's episode, I guess would have been last year's episode, was, man, the Jags went from the worst hire to probably the best hire with Doug Peterson. So I do actually think Urban Meyer is the worst coach in NFL history. The winning percentage is one of the worst ever. I think it actually is the worst ever because, you know, 3-11 or whatever it was, 2-11, it's like below 15%. There's some interim head coaches who didn't win games or you take that out. But if you look at any full-time hired head coach, I believe it is the worst winning percentage. So you don't just have the off the field stuff. On the field, it was just as awful. So even worse than Hugh Jackson in his 0-16 season. which the Packers barely beat them that year. Thank you, Brett Huntley, for that overtime win. That would have been awful if that was the Browns' only win. But yeah, like even I'd easily take Hugh Jackson over Urban Meyer 100 times out of 100. Actually, I was going to say 100 times out of 1,000,000. That doesn't work. 1,000,000 times out of 100. We'll say that way. That's how math works.
That's right. And another one I'll just pepper in, of course, showing my fandom of the Panthers and my lack of fandom for this coach, Ben McAdoo, when he took over in New York. That was he slicked back his hair, and somehow he just got tremendously worse as a coach. So I was very bummed to see when he actually became the OC for Carolina. So thankfully he is no longer doing that.
It's funny because he used to be the OC for the Packers as well. So yeah, remember that. I actually thought you were going to talk about Matt Rhule, who I view.
Oh, yeah.
My soapbox is he was less qualified because everyone talked last year about, oh, Jeff Saturday, what the hell has he done? I mean, he's at least been in NFL locker rooms. It's funny you talk about the Giants. Matt Rhule spent 1 year in the NFL before getting hired by the Panthers. He was
an assistant, wasn't he?
He was an offensive line assistant or something, like really low in with the Giants in like 2012. And that's it. Just that 1 year. Then he went to Temple, and then is the whole Matt Rhule story happened. But then, like, how is he supposed to come into the NFL and control a locker room when he's never even been in an NFL locker room? Basically, like, again, the 1 year. Whereas at least Jeff Saturday had that you know, Hall. Oh, I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but almost Hall of Fame worthy career, All Pro for quite a few seasons, I believe. Like all that time on championship teams, winning, or I guess one championship team anyway. So like he at least had that experience from a player's perspective. So like I felt that was at least more qualified than Matt Rhule. So I'm glad your Panthers made a much better hire in Frank Reich, who knows what he's doing.
Definitely. Yeah. Matt Rhule was more of the rah-rah guy, and that'll work in college. But I think when you tell a bunch of grown men who are making millions or tens of millions of dollars and are trying to put food on their plate for their family and everything.
Run laps.
Yeah. It's like, these are grown men. I don't think you're going to talk down to them like that, or just some of the press conferences after how he'd kind of favor certain players and not others. I'm like, just speak truthfully about how the game worked and encourage your guys to do better. Like, that's simply all you have to do. At least do that.
Yeah, players will be held accountable. Like, talk to us in meetings. Tell us everything I did wrong. Like, players, it seems like a lot of the good players want to learn. They want to get better.
Yeah.
But it seems like Matt Rhule hasn't learned how to do it. I mean, I think he should have just been an OC first. Come to the NFL, yep. Be an offensive coordinator, learn how to run an NFL offense first, and then run an NFL team. But I think he skipped steps, and it was a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, so 45 minutes in, let's get to our main topic now, dynasty rankings. So this is your first year that kind of having to chew it up with us in the dynasty ranking, so to speak. Yeah, well, I have to take a bite out of these jokes for sure. Yeah, so you're now part of the Going for Two aggregate rankings, which again are available on goingfor2.com, dynasty ranking section. You'll see Matthew Russell in that name there with his rankings. So being your first year publishing dynasty rankings, how did you find the experience so far? Because really, the work isn't done. Like, we're constantly tinkering and tweaking. We've got a whole off season to continue to work on these rankings. But what's the process been like so far?
The trickiest thing was, you know, of course, it being the first time I've done it. So I feel like the first time when you're building out these rankings, that's, you know, you're really immediately being confronted with how you feel about certain players, just conceptually speaking, versus applying it to a sincere 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 type of ranking. And then that you really kind of stop and have to think like, all right, these three clusters of quarterbacks, like these three right here, like, can I really put this guy ahead of that guy considering how last season went? All right, well, this guy's getting a little bit older. I feel like I was just kind of talking to myself, just talking out these scenarios of like, all right, I'm not looking, it is dynasty, but I'm trying to, you know, figure out like, all right, what are my philosophies and my strategies? So like, even after I get these first rankings set going forward, kind of what sort of uniform structure am I going to have doing this? And I know, again, that's as it should, it will be ever evolving. But what do I start with and kind of how do I build from there? So I kind of was able to kind of pluck a couple of things that I just have thought about in dynasty, for, you know, for each position. Well, the couple of those, you know, I mean, starting with the quarterbacks, you know, rushing upside is key. Seeing someone like Daniel Jones, who was able to, you know, elevate his floor with rushing. I know even last season, someone like Geno Smith is an anomaly who came out of nowhere, and it was purely based off of passing and more importantly, his efficiency. But it's more often than not that you see guys that are maybe not stellar passers are able to climb it to at least a, you know, back end to mid quarterback two simply off of rushing.
And I do want to say, I think an important distinction to make, because I do hear a lot of people talk, oh, rushing upside. I don't necessarily view Daniel Jones as a rushing upside guy, but you said it right. His floor elevates because of the yards. To me, the rushing upside guy is a Jalen Hurts who could score 10 rushing touchdowns, or Josh Allen, who's been able to score 7 a few seasons. Like, those are the guys, I think that's where you get the upside. But like, there's some guys that aren't going to score many rushing touchdowns and they'll give you a solid floor. Lamar Jackson's kind of like that, although I believe he scored 7. He's had like 7 touchdowns 1 year, but a lot of times it's okay, 1,000 yards. And I think the thing with Jackson is he just doesn't run very much near the red zone. He's been a really efficient touchdown thrower, and he's also had really efficient run games. So when it comes to the like red zone offense, him running isn't usually a big part of it. He's getting his runs off in the open field, long distance. And so like Fields and Jackson and Daniel Jones, I'd view them as the rushing floor guys, whereas the guys that are going to get the ceiling, what Dak Prescott used to be, what Russell Wilson used to be, now those guys don't really have the rushing ceiling anymore. They can maybe still maintain some rushing floor. So I think that's also an interesting dynamic as part of these rankings of like how you're viewing the rushing, because there is two different components to rushing.
There is, yeah. I mean, in terms of, you know, talking about that with quarterbacks and jumping over to running backs, I know a big thing that's talked about, especially in Dynasty, is, you know, what are you seeing as a window for a running back? How long do you think that they're going to be able to keep up whatever production they currently are? Again, now that the NFL, it's trended pretty aggressively towards, you know, looking at these contracts for running backs and understanding these guys are replaceable in the sense of being able to draft these guys on day two and get somebody that is an impact starter day one. So understanding that, you know, between competition and just overall role change on a team, if looking at them in a 1 to 2 year window, older guys that, you know, like we were just talking about Dalvin Cook, and who doesn't have a team yet, but I do think he's going to get a landing spot. I think he's going to do well this season. An older guy like Derrick Henry, you know, how we look at these guys is, you know, they will get older. They've had injuries, but ultimately they are superstars. But it's just how much longer does that superstardom last, and what premium do we put on these younger guys like an Alexander Mattison or maybe Rashad White, who are put in a position to get more volume? But what do they do with that volume? We sincerely don't know. How are we going to project that out?
Yeah, I think the idea of the workhorse back diminishing means those guys who still do it do get pushed up, even if they're older. And we'll definitely talk about one guy in particular that we still have really high in Dynasty rankings, even if, you know, he's on a second contract. And it's, oh man, he was drafted like 6 years ago. Yeah, Matt's right. He was drafted like 6 years ago. I think we're saying, you know, there's so few of these young running backs that are workhorses that, and I think that bleeds into kind of the next section of wide receiver, that we're willing to elevate some of these older guys in the rankings. And I think, I know when I've done rankings, I try to do them from a draft perspective, because I know some people will go more from trade value perspective, but to me, I'm more likely to use rankings if I'm drafting than if I'm targeting trades. Although I may still do that. I just still do like to look at that in my rankings to like, who are the players I should target. But a lot of times the to me, it's almost more tiers that I'm using it, because I think the value is so flat and not really like linear one to the other. Oh, wide receiver 12 is that much better than wide receiver 13. They're that much better than 14. So in a trade, you can kind of target a group of guys. Whereas when you're drafting, you have to make that choice, right? So that's where I find the rankings come into play more. I still love to use my tiers during drafts, but I find like that's really where I want to set my rankings for, is when I am drafting, I've got something to work off. When I'm making my auction sheets, I just scrape my dynasty rankings and put them on the auction sheet after I've inserted all the numbers. So I also come from that perspective of drafting. And to me, rather than take a like Breece Hall or a Travis Etienne, or I will now admit Kenneth Walker, although I was on the Kenneth Walker's dynasty RB1 train before the NFL draft. That train completely derailed and exploded and stuff, so that was not fun. Sorry if anyone got hurt in that explosion. The Dynasty Gambit is not condoning explosions of rounds of what sort. But anyway, like I'd rather draft a Austin Eckler, Saquon Barkley. I'll take that one shot, and I thinking I can get youth later on. I find that with wide receivers well. And I know this is a debate I've had with Brian Ford on Dynasty Saturday Night 5. He was gracious enough to have me on. My current wide receiver 6 through 9, it's those nice old producers that are just, they're still going. Cooper Kupp, Tyreek Hill, Stephon Diggs, Devontae Adams. in a startup, I want to all quote unquote reach on one of them, thinking the tier of younger receivers I have more access to and I can kind of hit that later. I'd rather roster those guys, or, you know, I'd rather prioritize picking one of those guys than Devontae Smith or Jalen Waddle. Seems to be like some people have him as like dynasty wide receiver three. I'm still taking Hill ahead of Waddle, like, because Waddle's been good, but he hasn't been Tyreek Hill good in terms of that true difference level producer. Cooper Kupp was the wide receiver one in points per game last year. Like, there's only five dynasty receivers I'll take over him, because it's these young guys who can be the difference makers. Obviously, Jefferson and Chase, AJ Brown, CD Lamb, and like, I'll throw Garrett Wilson there, almost even more projection, just because Aaron Rodgers. I think he can have like a really solid 2 or 3 year production window right now. But after that, like, I'll take Kupp, because I think what he does, so few, if really none, no receivers can replicate. So I think I can, I'll bypass Jalen Waddle. I love Amon-Ra St. Brown, and I think at one point I might have even had him at dynasty wide receiver five this year, but I've kind of accepted he's not quite that difference maker like an AJ Brown is. So I think right now he's probably my wide receiver 10. So like, that's one where I've kind of had that philosophical debate again with Brian Ford, and to accept it, like, that's how I want to approach a draft. I don't want to take two of them. Like, I don't want to go Cooper Kupp and then follow it up with Stephon Diggs, even though he would be the next guy in my rankings, but I'll prioritize one of the older guys to then hit a younger guy later, rather than, okay, I'll take the younger guy now. There's only really those four older guys, and maybe Adams falls, maybe Diggs falls further, but I don't want to risk that. Like, I'll take the cup right now and drink my water and drink all those points up.
Yeah. I think that does make a lot of sense in terms of looking at, you know, the wide receivers now, like, again, like some of these guys that you'd mentioned, that are older, but I think it's been very recent that they've produced at such a high level, again, even as early as this past season. So aside from guys like Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase, I do still have kind of in that realm of the 5, 6, 7, I have Amon-Ra, Garrett Wilson, and Chris Olave. I do have Tyreek Hill in front of Jalen Waddle, because I honestly don't fully understand the blind obsession with Jalen Waddle. Not that he's a bad wide receiver at all, but Tyreek Hill is still here. Tyreek Hill is still there, and he's a tremendous player. But that more than anything, looking at just the Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, aside from the fact that they're on the same team, considering, all right, how much longer is Tyreek Hill going to play? As he's even talked about, you know, he wants to be the 2,000-yard receiver this year, but then he's also like, you know, I think when my contract's up, I might just be done. Even if that's true, if you have someone at his level, at his ceiling, arguably his floor too, with his explosive ability year over year, do you want that for 2 years? Or would you rather have one of these other guys? Would you rather have a Jalen Waddle who is maybe going to be a top end wide receiver two more often than a wide receiver one throughout his full career? If it's about winning championships in your dynasty leagues and thinking that Tyreek Hill can get you that this year and next year, or get you closer to that. And like you're saying, it's the balance of, you know, if you're going for a Cooper Kupp, you balance it with picking a younger guy after that. You're not going to go two older wide receivers, and then God forbid if they're both retired in 2 years, you're sitting there going, I wish I had some Olave. But
and I think the one reason you would go with an Olave or a Waddle or an Amon-Ra, the trade value on those guys. You're not, yeah, you know, that might be the one way to be able to get an AJ Brown through a trade. Like, the AJ Brown manager isn't probably wanting to, what am I really getting out of Cooper Kupp? Maybe I get a slight boost in points per game, but it's so minimal in terms of the years where that's going to be the case. I can get AJ Brown for longer. Whereas you might sell them on tearing up from Waddle to get AJ Brown. Like, that's probably more likely to happen as a trade. So the one argument for those guys is the trade value, because the wide receiver market is like, that's almost liquid currency as elite quarterbacks or first round picks. Like, those are the three things everyone wants: elite quarterbacks, young wide receivers, and first round picks. If I just give me that, and I can build a dynasty team with that.
Exactly.
And I mean, you know, maybe if you have one tight end in particular, you'll be really happy.
Yeah, one tight end, and Travis Kelce. I mean, he's 34 now, if I'm correct.
Oh, I thought he was like 32.
Oh man. Okay. Well, that would be nice.
I'm gonna look that up. He's over 30. We know that.
Yes, he definitely is.
I mean, like, just in my top six, he's clearly the oldest. Like, all the other guys are, I think, yep. Kittle's probably the second oldest. I don't even think he's 30 yet.
I think he's 29.
Kelce's 33. He will be 34 midway through the season.
Okay. Which still, I have pretty much zero hesitation of putting him tight end one. Just he is one of those ones where it might just be kind of based on the position as well, because I really think after those first couple in that tight end grouping, you know, you have the Kelce, the Andrews, the Hockenson, and it depends on where you have, you know, Pitts, Goddard, and Kittle. But really, after you're getting out of those top five, top six, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, but I'm kind of saying it doesn't matter. I think you can kind of mishmash and stream in most leagues and just kind of figure it out, unless you have somebody, you know, I have in one league where somebody was basically hoarding. They had, I think it was Goddard, Andrews, they had somebody else notable. Not another one of the top guys, but unless it's that, I mean, when you look at Kelce, he's the one where he's the number one until he retires, and then he goes to zero. I think that's such a unique thing in rankings, where I would say most people, I would say at worst someone would have Kelce at two, just simply because of age. It's such a unique thing going through rankings. I put him as one, and then like I set one and really just looked past it. Like I didn't even rank him as one. I just like left it as like it wasn't even a thought to me. And I feel like that's such a unique thing in any other position. That's not what you're going to see really.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, aside from Mahomes, actually.
Well, yeah, but I think a lot of, like, almost everyone will have Mahomes one. Whereas, like you said, some people might have Andrews as dynasty tight end one. I know there's still some Kyle Pitts people out there that will still, like, he's the dynasty tight end one. In a sense, I guess a little less now, but certainly those first 2 years,
yeah,
he was as liquid of an asset as the young wide receivers, right? So if you drafted him in a rookie draft, that was the best place to invest in him because you could have traded him for a haul. Now, if you took him in a startup in the last 2 years, that's probably where you've lost value. But if you've drafted him in a rookie draft, you're probably fine with Pitts because you haven't had to invest. You just invested one rookie pick.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, if you took him in the first round of a startup, like that's, you know, the players that go in the first round of a startup are usually worth like three or four rookie picks. And that's like, that's if you can even get them. Usually, like, yep, you send the guy four picks and that, nah, I'm good. I'll hold Mahomes. So yeah, I think it's all about, you know, if you've really lost on Pitts, it's either because you sold the farm to get him or you drafted him in the first round of a startup. Whereas, again, the rookie picks were the smart pace to take him, because even if you took him 1-on-1 a rookie draft, that's like you've only got a finite number of rookies. That's like the max you could value out on a rookie pick, but you could draft him 1-on-1 and then get double that in trade value. So the smart people would have drafted Pitts early and traded him, because that's where you could have maximized on the value, because the trade value is still crazy. And if he rebounds, though, he'll probably go back up to dynasty tight end one in a lot of people's rankings.
Yeah, I think after that rookie season, I think people were quick to be like, oh, he's it. They don't, you know, even after getting Drake London and the following season, well, they don't need him because they have Pitts. It's like, I know the injury kind of derailed that. And of course, having the atrocious quarterback play that they've had, I'm not a believer in Desmond Ridder. You know, I think Alec Pierce is what made him look good in Cincinnati, with all due respect. But I do think he'll at least be better off with Ridder this season, but I don't think it's going to be tremendously better.
Was Travis Kelce at Cincinnati? Yeah, I know. That was a long time ago. He was at Cincinnati with Zach Caleros. So yeah, that's how long ago that was. Talk about 35-year-old quarterbacks, Kirk Cousins. Well, Caleros is right there too. He's my DFS pick this week, CFL Fantasy, by the way. I don't care if he's 15,000. There's like other running backs randomly and like wide receivers that are 15,000. Like, okay, yeah, I'll take the best quarterback if he's the same price as all these other elite guys.
I like it.
Actually, this week there was the starting running back for Ottawa was like 2,600. So it was a cheat code. Okay, I'm getting three guys that are 14,000 or more in the lineup. Yep.
Man, that's awesome.
Yeah, CFL Fantasy is awesome. Anyway, yeah, so shout out to Zach Caleros and shout out to Cincinnati, which has been a pretty good school at times, mostly for the Kelce brothers and Desmond Ridder.
Right.
And I guess Alec Pierce. I forgot about that one. But yeah, I guess I was going to say something else about tight ends. Now I can't remember. So, yeah, I keep doing that. That's fine. I've rambled long enough. I'm sure no one needs to hear any more of my ideas. It's going to just be more Kyle Pitts hate, probably. Yeah. Because I still have him at like tight end five, and that like feels like most people would say that's too low, but it just feels like I'm just doing it there for reputation. Like he's kind of by default there, but he hasn't really proven anything. And tight ends with that one position where I almost don't want the youth because the young guys so rarely produce.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like the ones that do just like do it once and then don't do it. Like Evan Engram, right? Like historic rookie tight end season, and he's been awful ever since until last year. Then he was great. So
yeah, and I'm kind of with you on that one. I mean, I have Pitts as the fourth tight end, but I've honestly, I didn't even feel great about it, and I'd almost rather just drop him behind Goddard and Kittle. I'd pretty comfortably drop him behind Goddard. I don't know about Kittle yet, although realistically, Kittle's only a year older than Goddard.
I can't quit Kittle, so he's still 3-4 for me. Him and Hawkinson, yeah. I kind of view them as those athletic freaks. Like to me, Kittle is what, without the blocking, of course, but like from an athletic standpoint, he's what we want Kyle Pitts to be.
Yep,
I'll take that now, especially because he had a career high in touchdowns last year with Brock Purdy. And that leads us to our next topic. Actually, I didn't even mean to transition there, but there we go. I guess I'm good at this or something. So naturally here in the game, I guess I took a gambit and it worked, but we're gonna talk about some specific players, difficult decisions in rankings. And it's funny because this was one of the guys I was thinking of too. And but really this whole quarterback room is the 49ers. And what do we do with Brock Purdy? What do we do with Trey Lance? So you wanted to bring up like specifically Purdy, how it was so difficult to rank him for you.
Yeah, he's one where I felt like I've been pretty high on him since it was last year and him showing what he could do. It was, you know, like you mentioned, it was tough figuring out your touchdown projections for Sam Howell because it was sincerely him starting one game. And Purdy, I think that puts it in a better light to be able to say, all right, we've got to see Purdy over a couple of games. He got to fully start a couple of games and, you know, had some easier, some not. But I think overall had shown, I mean, tremendous upside in the sense of him being incredibly composed, him being able to manage that offense incredibly well, which again, that was the big draw of talking about the Shanahan system is even Jimmy G can do it. You know, all you need is, you know, just that quarterback who can work well in the system. Again, like when you were talking about Kirk Cousins going to the Vikings, I think San Fran might've been a big name back when they were trying to figure out where he was going to go. And I think Kirk probably would have done pretty well in that system.
He has. Like we saw it in Washington when Kyle Shanahan was the OC there. Like there is that bit of familiarity for sure.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Brock Purdy, he was the big first test for me of like someone who before looking at rankings and really kind of setting them out, I'm pretty high on him. And I think in that offense, he's going to do tremendously well. I have him sitting at QB 20. So ironically, actually, he's one behind Kirk Cousins, one ahead of Derek Carr, which I mean, a back in QB 2, I think I always kind of viewed him as he'd be a great one to have in Superflex as that second quarterback once he's back and healthy, or at worst the QB 3 if you have, you know, a solid trio of quarterbacks. And once I finally had done the rankings and looked at it, I'm like, okay, 20 is about right. That makes sense. Even though I think that might still be higher than some others, but I think it's not atrociously higher.
Well, it is higher than me, but it's funny because again, back to that Dynasty Saturday Night Five appearance that I think at this point was like 3 or 4 months ago. But at that point, I had Purdy at like QB 22. And I know Brian Ford thought that was quite high. He had him in the 30s. And I think eventually I did drop him down to right around 30. He's back up to 26 now. But really, like QB 20 for me, I think is either Jordan Love or Kenny Pickett. So, like, frankly, he has done more, but I will say the two most difficult teams to project touchdowns this year, specifically passing touchdowns, were the 49ers and the Cardinals. Just because, like, as much as we've seen a sample size with Purdy, he had a 7.6% touchdown rate last year. Like he's not replicating that. There's no way. Mahomes' career average is 6.4. So to think Purdy's gonna like have another season. I know there's a stat a couple years ago that someone had presented. I think it was like a lot to do with Lamar Jackson's MVP season, but quarterbacks that had, I think, anything above, I believe it was exactly 7%, 7% or higher, 6.5% higher, having a one touchdown percent season of that, they average like a drop like 2% the next year. So, and like a lot of those guys are like Deshaun Watson's rookie season, he had like 8.something% touchdown rate, but it didn't hit my threshold of games. So that's why it wasn't included in the sample size for calculating, which like I'm good. I'm happy with that because that was just like an outlier, like, he only played seven games at 8% touchdown rate. It was kind of ridiculous. And he's never replicated that as good as Watson has been. So like, that was the thing is, okay, I can't really use Purdy at 7.6%. So basically I actually like, I divided everything in three and kind of averaged out the three quarterbacks, Purdy, Lance, and Darnold, gave me 28 passing touchdowns out of like, I guess if you average their career touchdown rates together, it's like 5.3%. Honestly, if Purdy can hit 5.3%, that's probably pretty good. So
yeah,
I might be still too low on 26, and like the more I think about it, the more he really probably does deserve to be in that Jordan Love, Kenny Pickett, Mac Jones range, right around QB 20. So,
yeah, and that leads in perfectly to his counterpart in Trey Lance, who I know you mentioned you have Purdy at 26. I have Lance at 26. And if I'm being entirely honest, even when I had him there, it's tricky when there's that, I guess you call it quarterback competition. And when you think of, you know, you're looking at your top 32 quarterbacks, it's weird to have two in the top 32 for the same team when you're thinking like, well, I have to pick one. I have to pick one or the other. Like, theoretically, one of these guys has to be like 33 and the other one's going to be within the top 32. I do still think Lance could get traded. It may or may not happen. I think when we're talking about in terms of his dynasty value, I think there is still the thought or the upside that, you know, God forbid if Purdy's not ready yet, Darnold's a capable backup. I don't think he's going to, you know, be a stud there in San Fran. So, you know, what does Trey Lance's career look like after Purdy presumably steps in healthy and blows the doors off? Not at the touchdown rate like you were talking about last season, but again, up above five, I think is possible.
Well, yeah, and I think all the 49ers want to do is win games anyways. They don't care about his touchdown percent, but
yep.
The tantalizing upside of Trey Lance, like that's the, honestly, like I think I've only recently had him down to 30. Like I had him in, like I had him ahead of Mac Jones and all those guys, like probably right around Kirk Cousins, Daniel Jones, QB 15, not like, you know, only weeks ago. So I've kind of just come on the train of, man, there's a chance Lance is buried on this team for two more years to end out his rookie contract. Like if Purdy's starting, they're not taking up the fifth year option. So is he just a backup for 2 years and then you're waiting, but then what kind of chance does he get to start? If he gets that chance, does he have the upside to increase? I do still believe in the talent. You know, I'd rather have his profile than Mac Jones, Pickett, or Love. But if they're starting this year, I'd rather have those guys and on my team and on my dynasty team. So like kind of that, I've kind of come around to just, yeah, Lance has kind of plummeted in my rankings. That's what it's been so hard is where do I put him? Is he QB 15? Is he QB 30? Anywhere in between. So that's been one of my difficult decisions. That's going to be fluctuating, I think, quite a lot. I think like this is the first time in my rankings I've had Purdy ahead of Lance, because even if, okay, if Purdy's starting for the 49ers, but like you said, Lance gets traded somewhere else, he might be the better fantasy asset if he can be running. And so it's been tough to rectify. And I still really don't know where to put Lance. It's funny that we're kind of close on him. So
yeah, we'll keep tinkering back and forth.
Sam Howell. You want to talk more about Sam Howell?
Oh, I could talk for days about Sam Howell. So I've got him at QB 24, and that was another one kind of like Purdy, not in their situation, but someone who I was pretty high on, you know, coming in. You know, Heinicke left town. He's over in Atlanta as the backup. I think a pretty quality backup there. And it seemed like the offseason had been so infuriating with Ron Rivera just taking polar opposite views at different points of, you know, Sam's our guy. And then it's like, all right, you know, we got Brissett, you know, he'll be competing, you know, we're just going to see how this shakes out. It's like, I'm not saying you have to like anoint Sam Howell the QB1 immediately and just purely claim that, you know, Brissett is, he's simply the mentor and the veteran guy there for leadership, but just consistency in saying Sam Howell is the guy, because I think it's pretty clear Sam Howell is the guy. Again, it's a great trio of receivers. You got Eric Bieniemy coming into town. I think he can to scheme up a very good offense for Sam Howell. He's got a big arm. He showed off his athleticism. I mean, it was his second to last year in college. He had making guys like De'Ami Brown and Daz Newsome look draftable in the NFL. And then in his senior season, rushed for over 800 yards. So, I mean, he makes it work. And, you know, he maybe doesn't have the prototypical look. I know he's not tremendously tall, but he's, you know, he's got a good frame to him and a big arm. So I think he's got good upside. I don't think he's going to really ever creep into the top 12 or 15 for me, but I think he's going to be that like fun back end QB too to have in dynasty.
I think jazz is kind of fun. I love jazz music. Daz doesn't quite dazzle that much, but you know, not many programs are doing this. We've like twice, 2 days in a row on the Going for Two Live Network, Daz Newsome's name has been mentioned. And yes, it was the same person saying it in the exact same context, but still, we're consistent here after all.
Yeah, I think I figured he needed some mention, although now I realize that I was not saying his name positively both times, so I may need to hide.
I mean, what positive thing can anyone say about Daz Newsome?
Fair.
Does he even have an NFL catch? I'm looking that up.
He got hurt. Sorry. He got hurt immediately, didn't he? When he, because he with went Tennessee. To the Bears and he got hurt. What was it, Bears?
Oh, you know what? I thought Tennessee drafted him and then like waived him almost immediately. Oh, okay. They gave his returns first. Like when you go to Pro Football Reference and they give the return yardage first, you know that's a bad sign. He actually does have 2 career catches.
Oh, touche.
Hey, that's only 3 more than Dwayne McBride had all his college career.
oh man.
Okay. Sorry, Dwayne McBride. Yeah, so you know, I guess that the cue to talk about running backs now, right? You have Howell at 24. I've got him at 32. I think I've got him like either right ahead of or right behind Desmond Ridder, and I guess that's like right behind Trey Lance. So I kind of view them in a similar light at this point. Christian McCaffrey, and this we were hinted at earlier, right? The idea of these true difference makers. Mm-hmm. I mean, Kelsey's up there as your tight end one. Like again, I've got Cooper Kupp, I think, is my wide receiver 6. I don't know where you have him, but it sounds like in the top 10 for sure. These like older difference makers matter. And that's what's going to, you know, these other guys might help you. Like your point with Waddle, that's what I was going to say earlier. Jalen Waddle might help you make the playoffs for the next 5 years, but Tyreek Hill might help you win titles in the next 2.
Yep.
And not to say Waddle can't, but like Hill's chances of doing that are probably more significant. So Christian McCaffrey, and we have that both reflected in our rankings. You've got him at RB2. I've got him at RB3. I can't quit Jonathan Taylor. He's still my RB1 in Dynasty. And I know that the numbers around like rookie quarterbacks and also mobile quarterbacks aren't great for the skill positions, but I do somewhat believe the narrative still of, you know, opening up the running lanes. You know, look at Alfred Morris's rookie season, like when with rookie Robert Griffin III, and like he was 2nd in the league in rushing yards, and he's never done anything close to that again. Like Ralph Amores isn't that great, but he had the context to really help him and maximize his skill. And yeah, that was Kyle Shanahan offense, right? So maybe that had a lot to do with it. So we'll see what Jonathan Taylor's like there. I would imagine Bijan's your RB1 in Dynasty.
He is. And honestly, I was even struggling with that. At one point when I'd initially done it, I had CMC as the RB1.
That would be a hot take, but I like the thinking of give me that producer, give me that title right now, or give me that guy that can help me as a production difference maker.
And with Bijan, regardless of where he ended up going, I think it was going to be, should he be the RB1? And then when he goes to the highest rushing volume offense, it's like, how do we say no to that? I liked Algier, you know, getting drafted, coming out of BYU, not thinking he was going to be a Bijan, but what he was able to produce, I'm like, all right, well, like, you know, he's a good overall back, and him being able to crack 1,000 yards, I think, was pretty incredible last season. So if anything, regardless of what you think of Algier, that is nothing but a positive for Bijan, regardless of what Algier or Cordarrelle Patterson are going to do or not do in that backfield.
But yeah, I'm all in on the McCaffrey train. I think I've got Eckler as my RB4, so it's the same type of thinking of let's, you know, if I can't get Bijan or Taylor, I don't want to be drafted Etienne earlier. Like I've seen some startup drafts, and not something I've been in, but like just people posting results where like Breece Hall is the RB1. Like what?
Yeah,
with like, maybe 2 behind Bijan, but still, like it's
yeah.
I don't get going for the running back we know has a torn ACL and he's recovering from it, but like how much time is he going to miss? And we've seen, you know, not everyone's Adrian Peterson. Like that season kind of spoiled us. But since then, we've had a lot of guys not do well that first year back from the ACL injury. Like, okay, yeah, it's not a career ender, but that first year back is like you almost lose 2 seasons. The year you tear the ACL, especially if it happened like and you miss the whole season, like a J.K. Dobbins story, and then like the next season, kind of a lost season. So yeah, Breece Hall, amazing start to his rookie season, but he missed out on most of that. He's gonna, you know, the second year is going to be impacted. Like, I don't really want to invest in Breece Hall right now. I've got 0 shares. I probably the highest ranked dynasty running back that I don't have any shares of at all.
Yeah. And I mean, realistically in dynasty, if you don't have him now, what are you likely you're going to have to pay as if he's currently healthy to get him off of someone's roster. Cause at this point, them being so close to him being able to be back on the field and again, not looking 100%, I'm sure, but getting closer to it. That's just a tough.
I guess I would say if he comes back and has the J.K. Dobbins season where he comes back, doesn't look great, and then misses more time and like you're without him for another portion of the season, that's the buy low window. Like that's the where he's probably the cheapest he's ever been. So, and I think that's more likely than he comes back and he's Adrian Peterson. And you can't ever acquire him ever, which is fair. Yep. But I would bet on there's like him and Javonte Williams, we haven't seen the floor of the value yet. So, like wait for it to dip, and that's the time to buy. It's still, it's again, I don't feel like recent, like seems like Gervonta has dipped, so it'd be an okay buy time now. I still don't want to do it because it might still dip further, but I guess we'll see. One running back we referenced earlier was Dalvin Cook, and it's funny how I had him probably right around RB 15 inside the top 20, certainly. Funny, kind of close to Rashad White, which we're going to talk about soon. But now I think with the, I've lowered him to 23, but it seems like he's a free agent. I have no idea where to put him, but you have him at 24. So we're both kind of, I don't know if you, how much conviction you had on Cook there, but we, do we both just blindly end up in the same spot?
Yeah, he was one where as I was, you know, purposefully picking other people, I had him kind of like kind of pegged. I was like, all right, I have him right here, kind of just like acknowledging where he was. And I think I got to a certain point where I was like, you know, I've got him after Cam Akers and ahead of Zach Charbonnet. I was like, that seems fine. Like, it's kind of just like, how far do I let him fall based on these other guys where, you know, they are firmly in this landing spot. They are on this team, you know, Charbonnet being a rookie, you know, there's some ambiguity there. Akers, we don't know a whole lot there, but presumably I don't think Zach Evans is going to be a tremendous competitor to him in terms of taking his workload there. But I mean, we do still believe in Dalvin Cook's talent. And I don't think, you know, the longer we wait, I think the more nervous some people may get, certainly the people that have Dalvin Cook in Dynasty. But again, it's him being purposeful and, you know, him being an older running back, and he's earned a good amount of money in his career. So he can be patient in where he wants to go. So don't let that dissuade anybody in Dynasty.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of those guys probably aren't signing until we get into training camps. A running back gets hurt, someone can get put on IR, there's money available. Like, they'll wait for their opportunities to get the most return as opposed to just signing now just for the sake of it. It's funny because I've now, because of this, him being released, I've actually dropped him below his brother, and I now have James Cook ahead of Dalvin.
Mm.
But that was a kind of a line. It was like, up until he was released, I had a really hard time making that. It's like, we've seen Dalvin do so much, and I wasn't the biggest James Cook believer. I really didn't do that much last year, but he's on the Bills. So, and they got rid of Singletary. They didn't bring anyone else in of note that's below the age of 30. Latavius Murray. Well, I guess David Harris is below 30, but yeah. I maybe he's not of note. similar to James Cook, I've got him, I think RB 19, one spot behind Rashad White, which those were my RB 3 and 4 from last year. I'm a big Rashad White believer. I know you talked about this on the Armchair Show last night, so we don't have to dive into too much details. The appeal of White is the, you know, kind of like Cam Akers you were talking about. It doesn't have much competition in the backfield. And just for a side note, I'm probably too high on Cam Akers, but I don't care. I've had him at RB 5 the moment he tore his Achilles, right? Like that was like, okay, he's RB 5. Oh no, now he's RB 35. I've kind of come back up though. He showed enough last year. I've got him in the top 15. I think I've got him like one spot ahead of Derrick Henry. So like J.K. Dobbins, Stevenson, Jahmyr Gibbs range, which is like, that's kind of like one of them might be a top 12 running back. The others will be just behind. Like that's kind of where I have Akers, which seems like a lot higher than consensus. Rashad White, though, I feel like the consensus is kind of with me. So you at RB 30, that's quite low. So what's the quick spiel on why?
So I really think one of the main things going for him is kind of like what we talked about with Madison, like we mentioned about Akers. It's more purely just the situation of, we know he's the guy. I thought he was not a tremendously efficient rusher. He did get, like, you know, 50 plus targets last season. So again, that's expected to only grow considering he's no longer sharing the backfield with Leonard Fournette. And now he's essentially just battling with Keyshawn Vaughn. And that's about it. I mean, and, you know, I know they brought in the rookie, but, you know, I know there's the health concerns there with him. So I don't know what's going to happen with that. I hope Sean Tucker does actually get a chance to play. But with that offense, also, I'm not really expecting much out of it. And I think in terms of game script and everything, I don't think he is talented enough, or the offensive line is good enough, or the quarterback is going to be imposing enough to where I think you can really have him be put in the best position to produce, even if he, you know, were, say, a better running back. And I don't think he is that. So he definitely has, you know, last season had a number of, you know, good plays. I know that the video that's always around Twitter is his stiff arm and a lot of these other things where it's like, oh, check this out. It's like, yeah, we also watched George Pickens do like some ridiculous contested catch. It's like, we also need to understand that Deontay Johnson is a PP monster and you think he should be ranked ahead of him. And I'm not trying to upset two different groups at the same time, bemoaning George Pickens and Rashad White in the same sentence. But it's someone who I get why people like him and he's positioned well. but I just don't think he's going to, you know, take full advantage of that with what I think is just average talent.
Well, you didn't offend me with the Pickens slander, because I totally agree. Deontay Johnson should be ahead of Pickens in Dynasty rankings. Yeah. I much easily would rather have him. Discord, right? That's happening, the SFB13 draft strategy. So, yeah, I didn't know that we'd run this long. So I think that these next two receivers we can touch on pretty quickly. Chris Godwin, yeah. Terry McLaurin, because I think they're both in the big tier of, after you get past those young guys, the T. Higgins, the DK Metcalf, Devontae Smith, that's probably your top 15. After that, I think it's a massive, like, for maybe from 16 all the way down to 30, it just seems like one giant tier. And so I don't mind bypassing those younger guys. I'll grab the older guy, then I'll grab the slightly younger guy here, like a Chris Godwin or like a Terry McLaurin. So I've got Godwin 18, you have him at 19, you have McLaurin at 20, I've got him at 24. So we're pretty close on both of those guys, to be honest.
Yeah, and lockstep. I mean, they're veterans. You know, they've been doing it. I think Godwin now is finally fully healthy and bounced back from that injury. Terry McLaurin is just a steady hand who can produce with any quarterback he has. And again, I'm thinking he's going to have one of the better, if not the best, quarterbacks he's had thrown it to him in the NFL thus far in Sam Howell.
Oh, I thought you were saying Jacoby Brissett, just to make Jamie happy.
Jacoby Brissett is incredible. But yeah.
You should be on the cheat sheet. They'll love you if you say that.
I believe in both of those guys. But yeah, like you're saying, you know, the upside isn't really there, especially, you know, with the Bucks. You know, it's Baker Mayfield, and how's that going to go? And I'm a Panthers fan, so I got to see firsthand how that went. But yeah, they're two good guys. And, you know, one guy I was honestly more excited to talk about, the next guy being Treylon Burks. He's another one that I feel like is polarizing. And I think in our rankings, we weren't tremendously far apart, but where would you say the consensus is in terms of, is it more where I've got him ranked or more where you have him ranked in terms of where people for the most part think he's at? Because I honestly can't get a handle on it.
Well, luckily Dynasty Pros does have that expert consensus ranking. So let me pull that up real quick. But yeah, and it's funny because, Yeah, I was saying that grabbing older guys and touching younger guys, I'll end up in jail for harassment, dude. Yeah, that sounds like more than harassment, though. that's practically assault, to be honest. So, I'm looking up my rankings. But yeah, it's funny because I am looking at my rankings on Full Press Coverage because I know that the ECR will be there and available. There may be a simpler way to do it. But I did recently lower Burks. Like, I had him inside the top 30, I think probably ahead of Deontay Johnson, and now I've kind of lowered him to the George Pickens range. I guess maybe my hope is that Hopkins actually does go to the Titans, and it's kind of greedy just because I had so much Tannehill. I've actually gotten rid of two shares since that's happened, but I guess to me, like, that would almost be one of the ideal landing spots in that, like, he gets a big target share, and specifically ideal for me because my only Hopkins share, I have Tannehill on that team. So, okay, gives me the stack. So there we go.
Nice.
So I'm hoping he goes to Tennessee. Looks like the expert consensus ranking has Burks at wide receiver 27.
Okay. All right.
So actually higher than both of us. So both of us are technically lower than consensus, although 36, I have kind of lowered him significantly. Yeah, I guess that's one spot ahead of George Pickens. There you go.
Nice.
One spot behind Kadarius Toney. So,
man,
I kind of
like what a weird Tony range,
because yeah, the ECR on Tony's awful. Wide receiver 43, like, that's,
yeah,
I guess 35 to 43 isn't that big a difference, but yeah, so it's, but again, that, like, I think part of the reason it was so difficult to rank these receivers, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, chew me out if that's the case, but it's just because this tier is so massive, like, who do you put ahead of who?
Yeah, I think if you just look at just the difference in number, that's not representative of what it really is. It's really, like you're saying, it's really, it's ranking, but it's in its tiers. And then it's seeing, like, all right, well, you know, I'd have this guy plus or minus six or seven spots. It's kind of just your preference. So,
all right, we're tight for time. So we'll quickly touch on the tight ends. Dallas Goedert, you've got him at 5. I've got him at 6. I think we've basically already said that anyway.
Yeah.
To me, this isn't that tough. He's actually one of the easier tight ends to rank, because I think he is, go back to the fantasy cheat sheet. They were talking about this perfectly. Like, tight end is like, okay, top of the peak, kind of an avalanche. there's a boulder holding it up, and then it just completely falls apart. Like, Dallas Goedert is that boulder, right? Like, he's the guy that really delineates the difference makers from the mush of tight end 7 through tight end 25 all being the same, who gets a touchdown on a weekly basis. Because he's done it without a big touchdown season. So he's getting enough volume. He gets enough yards. Touch on tight ends. I've got to stop touching stuff. I swear I'm not. but I will say I'm touching on this comment. No, I'm pulling up this comment just because it's shameless self-promotion on my part. But Full Press Coverage is an awesome show. Apparently Jamie listens on Stitcher. Wish you did it live so I could harass you in the chats. Yeah, I guess. I do a Full Press Coverage live stream on Sunday mornings, but there's also a Going for Two live stream on Sunday morning. So if I'm on the Going for Two channel, I'll say check that out. I guess the Cowboys tight end is what we can end with here. Luke Schoonmaker and Jake Ferguson. And we don't care about Peyton Hendershot, but looking at my touchdown projections, it seems like Ferguson is the better play than Hendershot, more likely to get yards and touchdowns. I kind of agree with that, but we both have Schoonmaker ahead of Ferguson. So we're both, I'm pretty high on the rookie compared to, like, he's my rookie tight end 3. Like, I've got him ahead of Mayer personally. So
crazy draft capital. I did not see that coming.
Yeah, the second round. Great athleticism. So I've got him at 21. You've got him at 26. Which, to be fair, like, you know, Dalton Kincaid seems like he's the tight end 7 in Dynasty. So, like, a rookie tight end 21 isn't too extreme, I don't think.
No, not at all. I think it's certainly. Yeah, I think it's certainly the more realistic view of, like, you know, it's still a second round tight end, but it's like, yes, but he's a rookie tight end. Give him time. He'll grow, you know.
Cowboys tight ends must be nice if you're touching them. Okay, Jamie's really not insufferable. I love Jamie.
He said it this time. We didn't say it.
I probably said it, to be honest. I talk enough. I probably say everything. I guess this is fun to end with. It hasn't come across yet in any of the players. We've been close. Like, there's quite a few players where we're one spot apart.
Yeah.
We both have Jake Ferguson at tight end 31, where he truly belongs, clearly.
We just know.
I think it's a tight end range where it's, okay, it's the guys I think are the backups, but there is potential for them to start. And, you know, tight ends might take, you know, young tight ends usually take time. So there's a chance that Ferguson is ahead of Schoonmaker for this year. And he's the better producer on a 1 year basis, whereas Schoonmaker is the more long-term play. Now there is a chance Schoonmaker just comes out and smashes immediately, right? So we kind of view both options in the rankings, but, you know, just outside the top 30, but still having Ferguson there, not completely buried in the rankings, because there is a chance that he is still the guy.
Yeah. And that shows, of course, those are guys that I picked to talk about. That shows my weird excitement for just obscure tight ends that are towards the late 20s, early 30s. But there's always something fun to talk about outside of those top 5-6 tight ends.
Well, I think, and okay, Jamie, cover your ears, like reaching on a David Njoku, or, you know, like, I like Evan Ingram, but like taking those guys, or Dulcich, where he's going, Cole Kmet too high in drafts, like taking those guys at like tight end 7 through 12, you're missing out. It's not even the other tight ends you're not taking, but it's you're missing out on other positions. Yep. You get that running back depth, or can you get a third quarterback, or is that where you can hit some more wide receivers and you know, get to the threshold of, okay, I want, you know, 6 or 7 receivers, but I want them to all be top 50 guys and then not touch any receivers after. There you go. Okay, I need a new word. Not draft any receivers afterwards, but like that's where I'd like to go for those tight ends. Okay, if I don't want to spend an early pick on one, I feel like I can get maybe Schoonmaker and Ferguson aren't the best examples, but like, you know, Noah Fant, I think I've got him at like tight end 24. Mm-hmm. Am I really getting much difference between Noah Fant and Keelan Cole? Or Keelan Cole. Cole Kmet. I don't know why I thought Keelan Cole. Jeez. is Noah Fant really good? Like, is Cole Kmet really going to outproduce Noah Fant that much?
True.
I know he had 7 touchdowns last year, but he also had, I think, 3 before that in his entire career. So it's like kind of an outlier season. Like,
yeah.
He's probably not getting 7 touchdowns again. He's probably not touching that. That one was on purpose.
And by the way, I feel like every time I hear it now, I just think of Arrested Development. No touching.
Uh-oh. we won't take any more time just because, again, Jeff's got something going on Discord right now, a Scott Fishbowl 13 live discussion, so we'll free up the airwaves for that. Matthew, you can use this opportunity to let people know where they can find your content, anything, you know, bite-sizable or something that takes a longer meal to digest, anything that anyone can chew on?
I'll give you a little appetizer. So you can check me out on Twitter at Father Dynasty and check out my YouTube channel, Father Dynasty, as well. I've got a couple of shows on there. I've got the Father Dynasty podcast, which is kind of the first thing I've done, talking with analysts for the most part, but a little outside of fantasy football. And then the FF Perspective, which is a newer weekly show I'm doing that is, of course, talking fantasy football.
Ah, fantasy football. We love that. Apparently, Jamie says, great show. Great comments happening. Jamie and Dave, appreciate you both joining us in the chats and some great, great topics to touch on. Oh my god. All right, we're ending here. Thank you, Matthew. This was a great show.
I appreciate it.
And of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Senra Says. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of the Dynasty Gambit. And again, check out all the great Going for Two live shows. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Again, hit that notification bell so you will get the live updates, because there's a show almost every night of the week. Again, PLP tomorrow, Dynasty Saturday Night 5 on Saturday night. Follow the title. Jamie's loving this. Oh, I started that comment. I meant to show it. There we go. Yeah, Jamie's loving this. We're loving it too. Love all the support. Love talking with you, Matthew. This was a great conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kyle.
And again, thank you everyone who's either listening to the audio or watching us on the live stream. This was another episode of the Dynasty Gambit. Bye for now.